The Mönchstädtners. A robust Bavarian couple, both 40-ish and dressed much too warmly in their alpine Loden outfits, are vacationing in the USA. Somewhere in the desert between Disneyland and Las Vegas, just a pinpoint on the map called Baghdad, the final showdown, long overdue, takes place. He slams the rented car into reverse and into the telephone pole behind them. She yanks the stinking cigar out of his mouth and throws it out the window. He bellows and crashes into the telephone pole again and again and again. The last time, the trunk pops open. Something inside Jasmin Mönchstädtner snaps. She gets out, slings her matronly purse over her arm, takes one of the identical suitcases out of the trunk, the one with her initials, JM, and trudges off down the road, leaving the car and her husband there howling. Then, silence. Just the click-clack of her heavy high heels on the asphalt.
A desert road from Vegas to nowhere. Someplace better than where you've been.
A strange light in the blue sky ahead of her mesmerizes Jasmin. Fan-shaped rays of white light bundled together in the middle. Like a napkin ring, she thinks. A pickup truck rolls to a stop next to her. The black face behind the wheel asks her if she needs any help. "No, no, thank you," Jasmin insists with a wave of her hand. For a split second, she thinks she sees her thermos with a Rosenheim sticker in the back of the pickup. Jasmin loves her coffee. The road leads to a shiny metal water tower, part of a complex including a rundown filling station, motel and cafe, where shortly after the pickup's arrival, a fight breaks out between Brenda and Sal, the black couple who run the place. It is caused by Sal's typical forgetfulness. He was supposed to pick up a new coffee machine, and reaches its climax when Brenda sees the strange thermos. "You take it back where you found it." And he, that time of the month again. Her response to his comment is an empty oil can thrown at his head. He packs a few things into a duffel bag and heads for the wide open spaces. "Go on, get the hell out of here," Brenda fumes. Here, only moments later, Jasmin checks in. Since there's still no new coffee machine, the Indian behind the counter makes some instant coffee in her thermos with a Rosenheim sticker. She just watches. Brenda's sense of reality is shattered by this woman who simply shows up in the middle of nowhere without a car. Brenda hates things she can't figure out. "Where's the center?" asks the lady in Loden. "The shopping center?" "The center of Baghdad." "This is Baghdad." "Is this all?" "This is it," nods Brenda. "Aha." To which Brenda adds an ironic, "Mm-hmm." "I won't have her around long," she thinks. She's wrong. As Jasmin enters her room, the first thing she sees is the only piece of decor, a painting. A painting of the same bundle of light in the sky she had headed toward. She opens her suitcase and freezes. Nothing but men's clothes, her husband's, and a box of magic tricks from Disneyland. So there she stands, forlornly in her loden, in front of the desolate motel. Why, she might as well be on the moon. She knows how pig-headed her husband is. He wouldn't come looking for her, and she wouldn't get back in the car. The entire place is covered with a thin layer of desert sand. The thought keeps going through her head, if only I had a big vacuum cleaner. Brenda is roughly her age, maybe a little younger. When Yasmin looks into her coal black face, she envisions herself in a big pot over a fire, surrounded by gyrating savages. But at the same time, she feels deeply attracted to her. Rosenheim is far, far away. And so begins the story of Brenda and Yasmin, the story of a friendship. But not before Brenda calls the sheriff, after discovering the weird men's clothing while tidying up the room. Yasmin's ticket and passport are okay. What she wears is her business, the sheriff tells Brenda. She can dress up like Baby Doll or King Kong. It's a free country. Yasmin borrows a dust cloth and starts cleaning her room. This is at least a beginning, Frau Münchstettner, she says to herself. During her visits to the cafe, she notices that some of the customers are regulars. One of them walks up to her with the gait of an old Western hero and introduces himself, Rudy Cox, from Hollywood. He points to his trailer through the window. He would love to paint her portrait, semi-nude. Watch out, Frau Münchstettner, she warns herself. Truckers hang out here, so does Brenda's teenage daughter Phyllis, who wiggles her cute little behind when admirers drop in, which is pretty often. Brenda's on the go all day long. She trudges over to the motel sullenly, back to the cafe to work the cash register, out to the pumps, into her office, where years of disarray have become a permanent fixture. The last thing on Phyllis' mind is helping out, and her 17-year-old brother, Sal Jr., has only one interest in life, Johann Sebastian Bach. In the cafe is a piano, but Sal Jr. is only allowed to practice when regular customers are there. When Yasmin comes in, Brenda orders him to stop, which aggravates him no end. Morning, noon, and night, he practices his well-tempered clavier. Tied to a baby chair next to him is a small black infant who, after the Indian gives him a bottle, looks very satisfied. The child is not Sal Jr.'s little brother, but his son. So Brenda is saddled with a grandson, but no daughter-in-law. One day, while Brenda is in town, Yasmin cleans up her office, scrubs it spick and span from the floor to the ceiling fan. After she finishes piling up the garbage outside, she has a cup of coffee. She then tiptoes into the adjoining room, bends over the sleeping baby, and presses her cheek gently against his. Brenda explodes. What the hell is she supposed to do with an empty office? Where, she demands to know, does Yasmin get the damn nerve to stick her nose into other people's business? I thought it would make you happy. I've never heard anything so ridiculous in my life, snaps Brenda. One of the onlookers, an exotic-looking woman who, at some other time, might have graced a French salon, smiles with malicious delight. She's one of the regulars, Debbie, the tattoo lady. Her parlor is a motel room 3 doors down from Yasmin's, and her clientele is composed mainly of the truckers who stop here. With unconcealed pleasure, she bores her needle into the muscular flesh of her customers. Debbie never says a word. Everybody assumes she's mute. Brenda had wanted to use the cleaning incident as a pretext for throwing Yasmin out. But sitting there in her office that evening, watching Phyllis scatter her things around the room, she finds herself saying, "Pick up your shit, sweetheart. This is an office for customers." Later, in the cafe, Yasmin smiles at Phyllis, who instead of doing her homework is polishing her nails. Phyllis thinks she's being made fun of and sticks out her tongue. Brenda slaps her. Back in her room, Yasmin opens the box of magic tricks. While tears are running down her cheeks, she starts to read the instructions. The next morning, Phyllis is tidying up the motel room. She just can't resist and tries on Yasmin's loden jacket. Then she discovers the men's clothes. Yasmin is suddenly standing behind her. Phyllis stammers an apology for sticking out her tongue. "That's okay," says Yasmin, looking at her jacket. "Do you like it?" Phyllis is just tickled. Yasmin lets her try everything on in countless combinations. She admires the pink of the girl's palms. Phyllis is excited about her new friend. And so is Sal Jr. With her eyes closed, Yasmin sits in the cafe while Sal Jr. practices. "She's the only person who understands my music," he protests when his mother tries to intervene. He takes Yasmin into town on the back of his motorbike to visit the old piano teacher who gives him free lessons. When the man hears Yasmin is from Germany, he cordially invites her in. "You come from the land of our esteemed master Bach."
"I come from Rosenheim," is Yasmin's reply.
At night, she practices her magic tricks in front of the mirror. Out in the desert, behind a bush, Brenda's husband, Sal, has an old pair of binoculars up to his eyes and is surveying what he has left. "Oh, Brenda, Brenda," he moans time and time again. Morning, noon, and night. "Oh, Brenda, Brenda." He can't see into Yasmin's room, which by now is a cozy little nest. Phyllis is trying everything on again. Sal Jr. is practicing on a dummy wooden keyboard, and Yasmin is performing magic tricks for the baby on her lap. The door flies open and Brenda bursts in like a fury. She shouts the children out of the room and tears the baby out of Yasmin's arms. Her tirade climaxes in telling Yasmin to get the hell out with the sentence, "Go play with your own kids." But before Brenda can slam the door, Yasmin raises her hand defensively and softly says, "I do not have any." The words work magic on Brenda. She gazes at Yasmin. Yasmin's eyes exude an infinite tenderness. Brenda's rage vanishes. She closes the door behind her. Her footsteps recede, then stop and hesitantly come closer again. The door opens gently. "I didn't mean it that way," Brenda mutters awkwardly. "All the work around here, and my husband left me a week ago."
I didn't mean it that way. That evening, Yasmin appears in the cafe. The Indian puts two plates of food down on the counter. Yasmin looks at Brenda, takes them, and serves the two truckers sitting at a table. Brenda lets her. One of the men asks her for some crackers. Yasmin looks him in the eyes. Magic. As soon as she utters the word, the crackers are there in her hand. You want some too? She asks the other man. Magic. And they're there. She does a round of the cafe. For Phyllis, she conjures up a silk scarf. She produces a coin from out of Sal Jr.'s nose, two eggs from the Indian's ears. She stops in front of Brenda and stands there for a moment. Magic, she whispers, and hands her a red rose. It's not long before the word spreads among the truckers about the black and white magic ladies. Brenda has become Yasmin's assistant. The Baghdad, California highway exit is a real hit. Hands are sawn off and reappear unscathed from a magic box. Sal Jr. plays swinging Bach. Yasmin waits on tables. Phyllis wiggles her cute little behind. And Rudy Cox's semi-nudes of Frau Münchstettner become more and more revealing. Yes. For when Yasmin discovered that the painting of the strange light in her room was his, and that although he was from Hollywood, he wasn't an actor, but a set painter, she ventured into his trailer and posed for him, buttoned up with a prickly pear in her fingers. During each successive sitting, she reveals a little more of herself, on one occasion holding a mango, on another a passion fruit, or a honey melon, or even a giant pumpkin nestled in her lap. When Rudy Cox shows her a finished portrait, and she sees her vision, her bundle of light in the background, she reveals, slowly, very, very slowly, one of her ample breasts. Ingratitude. Meanwhile, out in the desert, Sal moans, Brenda, Brenda. Magic, magic, demand the customers. The place is packed. Truckers are crowded outside Debbie's tattoo parlor. The door opens and one of her customers emerges from the dark. It is Yasmin, who proudly displays her bundle of light that Debbie has tattooed on her shoulder. Rudy Cox had informed her that this phenomenon is produced by the many mirrors in a nearby solar energy research center. Brenda and Yasmin hold up a tray of lost articles, billfolds, watches, charms, even a toupee. To roars of laughter, the articles are returned to their owners. But the sheriff's unexpected visit puts an end to it all. Yasmin's visa, her time here, has run out. Suddenly, Brenda and the others are alone again. What they had found has been lost. Only Tattoo Debbie smiles. Who is it? Brenda shouts into the phone. Her office has begun to take on its former appearance. From very far away, she hears Rosenheim.
I am
the thermos filled with strong black coffee is ready and waiting. The taxi stops a good distance from the cafe, and Yasmin heads for it with her suitcase just like the first time. Brenda walks towards her. The desert is no longer gray-brown. It is in bloom. Spring has come. Brenda and Yasmin embrace. But somehow Rudy Cox is not his former easygoing self. What could it be? He greets Jasmin almost shyly. Miss Münchstädtner? In no time at all, the news has spread over CB like wildfire. The Baghdad exit is in again. The joint is jumping.
Brenda, Brenda.
In glittering lamé on the road to Las Vegas tales, Brenda and Jasmin knock him dead.
Chili size with a banana pie.
Brenda, Brenda.
They look a little like Laurel and Hardy in drag. One of the men in the audience has not come for laughs. Sal. The show is over. Brenda approaches him. He looks in her eyes questioningly. They embrace. She then introduces him to Jasmin as a prodigal head of the household. This is my girlfriend, Jasmin. But watch it, Sal. We're a duo. And from now on, the oil cans will be flying from two directions. If you'd have let me give you a ride, lady, Sal responds, things sure would have been a lot easier. Brenda kisses him and he sighs, oh, Brenda, Brenda. But what are all the neatly packed cardboard boxes doing in front of Debbie's door? Debbie is leaving Baghdad, and nobody understands why. Everybody just stands there amazed. Why, Debbie? Why? And Debbie finally speaks. Too much harmony. Her lovely witch-like eyes glisten earnestly. Early the following morning, Rudy Cox knocks on Yasmin's door with a bouquet of desert flowers and asks her to become his wife so she can stay. Well, Jasmin Münchstädtner replies, I'll talk it over with Brenda.